Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
When personal finance connects you to both your funds and the stuff that matters, that's money. And that's Cash App. Know what else is money?
Using Cash App to request that $50 your cousin owes you.
Actually, finally, getting that $50.
Easily divvying up those pizza and wing checks before your boys have a chance to slip out.
Tipping the delivery guy when you're flat out of cash.
Hearing an awesome musician on the train home and tipping their cash tag.
Sending everyone in your family group chat a dollar just because.
Splitting the cost of tickets to that really expensive sporting event you were afraid you were going to have to foot the bill for.
Watching your paycheck grow without you lifting a finger.
Collecting all that money for your fantasy football winnings.
Or at least easily shelling out that money for your fantasy football dues.
Getting paid to read a wonderful ad script from my good friends at Cash App.
Sending, spending, saving, splitting, tipping, donating, gifting, or just typing numbers, all with the number one finance app in the App Store, that's money. That's Cash App.
Download Cash App from the App Store or Google Play Store today to create your own Cash Tag.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Welcome back to part two of the discussion on the offense. Gabe Ferguson is here joining us, a relatively common guest on the show and an uncommon talent in terms of his analysis of the game of football. Gabe, thanks for joining us again.
Well, what a kind introduction again. Thank you for having me.
All right. Appreciate you coming on. We talked a lot about in the first episode about a variety of things. If you want to understand why mathematicians are so upset about the 4th-and-1 call, we spent a good amount of time on that particular topic and hopefully give something that's of value. We saw a hyper-efficient Ravens offense. We talked a lot about Lamar Jackson's part of that, the receivers part of that, how that was put together. We talked, frankly, a lot in very positive terms about the Ravens' current position in terms of DVOA and how lucky this team is and how good this team is and how we should feel fortunate that this is one of the teams that has a real chance to win the Super Bowl. It's a great time to be a Ravens fan and start acting like it, damn it. We don't want to have a lot more negativity. But anyway, if you didn't listen to part one, please go back and download that and give it a listen. A lot of good stuff, I'm sure. And you got Gabe on, so you know you're going to have a lot of really good, interesting football talk. So we kind of stopped a little bit before we normally do in terms of the topics we go through, but we usually go through scheme in the first half of the show. But this is a light game for the Ravens, not super light, but lighter than they have been at 1.71 heavies per play. Now that's tight ends, fullbacks, and outside linebackers. Sorry, not outside linebackers, OL6s per play. Okay, so they were at 152 against the Eagles. They're really showing the shortage of, you know, the inactivity of Charlie Kolar was really hurting the team. I think they're still playing a little light without him. Do you feel like that had any effect on this game? Did you notice it in any way in terms of play calls or in terms of you know, what they were able to do successfully?
It wasn't something that stood out to me. I do think, you know, maybe there's been a little bit of an impact on their ability to run as effectively, especially, you know, there. I feel like there was not quite the effectiveness with Derrick Henry that I might have expected.
Yeah.
Not that he had a bad game, but you know, he didn't have like the huge performance that we've seen from him earlier in the season. He didn't have a ton of carries, and that's probably part of it. But I do think that there is a little bit of an absence there that's being felt. It's just they don't have that you know, extra inline blocker that they had with Kolar out there. Because it's not, I mean, Likely's good in the open field. Andrews is a decent blocker, but he's not going to really move people. Kolar just was growing into that role. So it's unfortunate that he's going to be missing some time.
Yeah, Kolar gives them a pool of two heavies they can draw from as more or less inline blocking guys, and a pool of two guys who really are more used to being split as wide receivers. And they didn't use them both in that role, but both of them played a lot of snaps. Andrews and Likely each played 2/3 of the snaps, which is kind of a total that we kind of bandied around in the preseason as being, hey, if you get them each on the field for 2/3 of the snaps, then you have Kolar and Ricard splitting the other 1/3 of the snaps. You'd still be at two heavies per play. But they really miss having one guy who's a legitimate receiving threat and can also block. And Charlie Kolar is that guy in a big way. And it would have helped him. I could tell you one way I think it would have helped a lot is they've gotten a lot of receiving value out of Hill. And Hill's receiving value, generally speaking, has come in games where he has very limited set and chip blocking responsibility. And so, for instance, in this game, he had two chip blocks he threw the whole game. That was it. I'm sorry. Check that. Two chip blocks the whole game. No set blocks. And he has this big receiving game where he's getting out in space, being able to survey the field, knows where he has to get. And he's not doing that coming off the rib cage of an edge defender and, you know, having to then reorient himself. I just think it's a big advantage for Hill to not have to worry about a blocky responsibility. And if you had Kolar, you know, there's plays where you can just make that be Kohler's responsibility and Hill becomes a more valuable receiving weapon.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Although Hill did have a good game receiving, so
Just two chip blocks was I think the reason was that he didn't have his normal, you know, 10 or 15 combination between set and chip blocks.
Yeah,
and Ravens still had to use a lot of set and chip blockers in this game. They used a reasonable amount, 6 set and 13 chips, a 0.68 per play, and that's out of 5 eligible receivers, folks. So you know what percentage of you're giving away about 13-14% of your total eligible receivers with that. It was a normal amount. It did include a healthy dose of chip blocks versus the edge rushers. Normal amount for any game. What was good about it was, we talked about this in the pass rush in the first show, is that the Giants rushed 4.7 men per play. And if you can get away with this few in terms of set blockers in particular, most of them are chip blocks, and still have a lot of ATS opportunities, that's a really good game. That is a really good opportunity set you're providing your quarterback, because they're, if you think about it as light boxes for a running back, well, the quarterback, if he can get all protection being equal, wants light secondaries.
Absolutely. And to further expand on that, offenses are in their best performance when you have 5 people en route. Like, yeah. I mean, you have the most opportunities in order to pick up yards when you have more players running routes. So if you can, you know, use a quick chip and still go into a route, and grant your quarterback, you know, the space he needs to operate, that's your optimal solution. So especially if you're able to properly account for a blitzing defender, then that gives you a real advantage.
Let's see, what else do we want to do? Wide receiver snaps actually pretty light also, despite the light heavies, and some of this was a matter of not too many total snaps, but 14 snaps out of Wallace, 17 out of Aguilar, 11 out of Walker. Nice to see him get 11 snaps and you know, the one touchdown pass.
Yeah, it was nice to see Walker out there. I think, you know, Wallace, I think maybe has kind of inched his way into that third wide receiver a little bit. You know, it hasn't just been last game. He's kind of been in there a little bit more over the past three to four weeks. I feel like his snap numbers have come up. It'll be interesting to see if Aguilar does miss some time, if it just goes directly to Wallace as the facto number three wide receiver. If you know, Deontay Johnson just isn't on the field ever again for the Ravens. But it's interesting to see Walker out there. You know, I think the first thing I noticed was the special teams. And then seeing him actually on the field and meaningful snaps, he adds a different dimension to the offense in terms of his speed. Not that the Ravens are slow, wide receiver, but that's kind of how he was perceived as a prospect coming into the NFL, mm-hmm. as a player who can, you know, stretch the field. So if he actually can turn into someone who is going to be on the field more often and making plays, that could be an interesting factor for them down the stretch.
So you're an opposing defensive coordinator for any of the remaining teams that the Ravens have to face, including any playoff teams they may face. How do you look at the Walker situation? Does this give you an additional wrinkle you need to figure out in your advanced scouting, is how are you going to deal with Tez Walker if he's on the field?
I mean, I think you have to consider him as a deep threat for sure. And, you know, obviously I think Lamar Jackson has earned the respect of opposing defensive coordinators, not just as an option running quarterback, but also as a passing quarterback. If he's on the field more often, does that mean you're seeing a lot more two high shells? And does that open up the running game if that happens? So it does play a little bit into kind of like the chess matchup between coordinators.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Good, you know, average depth of targets for most of the Ravens receivers. Flowers is a little bit lower than he'd normally be at 8.1 yards. He did throw some shorter passes to him, just to try and advance the chains and whatnot. But Bateman was 23.8, Aguilar was 24.0, Walker was 30.0, and Andrews was 14.0. So that more than makes up for it. So the days of Lamar Jackson, you know, running a really short dink and dunk offense are long gone. You know, we talked about a little bit in the first half of the show that he had 61% of his yards through the air, where that number would normally be about 49%. So big uptick in that, and just excited general about the way the receivers are being used and the year Lamar is having, obviously.
Yeah, I really think that this is, you know, the evolution of where this offense has become. And, you know, I think one of the things that we've seen this year from the Ravens offense, and this game maybe not quite as evident as some others, but they've really been able to attack intermediate passing exceptionally well, especially off play action. They were throwing a little bit more deep in this game specifically, but it hasn't been so much of the short, you know, throw a quick screen. I mean, they've worked that in occasionally at times as ways to beat pressure looks from opposing defenses, but it hasn't been their bread and butter. I think a lot of last year, especially in the first half, we saw that, and we've seen it at times this year, but they've really gone into more of a full field stretching offense where they can attack a defense at any part. And that is part of the reason why they're, you know, so successful. Even without having like the true de facto like deep threat of a wide receiver that some teams have. And we just talked about Tez Walker, you might become that. But they've had Bateman, you know, running a lot of routes. They've had, you know, Flowers probably more intermediate, but he's also run some to kind of occupy safeties at time with his speed. But the ability of them to really do anything they want is what makes them really so dangerous.
Yeah. No, it is absolutely great to see that all the changes Lamar's made at the line, the pre and post snap adjustments he can make, the, you know, the in play adjustments just from the mesh point are one consideration. He gets his own linemen into trouble sometimes when they think he's a run and he decides it's going to be a pass and they're downfield. But generally speaking, you know what Lamar is doing in terms of option football, whether it's, you know, RPOs or just option from the mesh point to run it with him or Henry, been remarkably successful this year. I don't think anybody could really find fault with how he's playing football right now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the truth there. So we'll definitely see, I mean, this was a game where I think they went back and utilized it more so than they have in a lot of recent games this year. So it was good to see that.
All right, let's move on and talk about some offensive line play. This is, in my opinion, a pretty big game for the offensive line. And I'll just start with a couple of things. We talked about this at the first show, but they had 12 amper time and space opportunities to just 8 pressures. That relationship is one of the most important things. Anytime you get a 1-to-1 or better relationship of ATS, that's fantastic. Even like 1.3 pressures per ATS is probably okay, about normal in most circumstances. But having 12 3-second pockets and only 8 pressures is unbelievably good. In addition, they had, what was it, a couple of false start penalties? Yeah, they had one by Jones and one by Linderbaum in the game. So not a whole lot of penalties to drag down the grades. They did have a couple of sacks allowed. Most of that, or some of that, was not the offensive line being involved in it. It's about a little less than 2/3 of that went to credit to the offensive line. So generally, really good game of pass protection, and one we hadn't seen in a while. And that's the one thing the Giants did present was two pretty decent edge rushers in Burns and Thibodeau.
Yeah, they do have good edge rushers. They are missing Dexter Lawrence at defensive tackle, who's probably one of the better interior defenders in the league. So I think that was probably felt a little bit in terms of how that impacted what they were able to do in terms of bringing pressure. I think that is probably right now Ravens' weakest point. I mean, not probably, I think definitely, in terms of their ability to kind of protect against the really impactful interior defenders. We've seen that some of their worst offensive performances against teams that have really strong interior defenders.
Cam Hayward and Jones.
Jalen Carter, yeah. Chris Jones, exactly. So yeah. Those have been the games where they've really had the most issues. So I'm hopeful that, you know, they might have a plan to kind of combat that. But that always is a pressure or a problem. If you don't have like the strength of your team along the interior, and if the other team has that, those players, it's hard to kind of always be able to double team, because sometimes they'll bring guys and set up the one-on-ones, and you have to be able to occasionally win those one-on-ones as an offensive lineman. And that's probably not the Ravens' strong suit right now. So against this team, they were able to win a lot because they didn't have quite that threat on the inside. So we'll see if they have, you know, some mechanisms in the future to, and we'll see it in the upcoming game probably against Pittsburgh.
Right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Chris, Hayward was on the injured list today, but it was just a rest day in theory for him. But they have, you know, T.J. Watt didn't practice. And they had a number of other players, including Deshaun Elliott, who's he's having an unbelievable year for the Steelers, who was not active either.
I think that, you know, going back to the O-line in general, I wanted to maybe get into some of the individual players and see how they stacked up in this game. You want to get started with that?
Sure. Let's start from left to right, if that's okay. Ronnie Stanley, 49 plays. He missed 4 blocks, allowed 1.5 pressures, 1 sack, left the game early, of course, didn't play the last 2 drives of the game. Not of course. Some people may not know that, actually. 0.67 per play with an adjustment that gets him up into the C range. Not an ideal game by any stretch, and he was one of the weaker links on the Ravens offensive line. He has had a fair number of moderate grades recently. I still think he's having about a C+ season overall from what I've seen from him. It will be incredibly difficult for the Ravens to find that in a replacement next year. So even if the expectation were for 2 or 3 years of C-level play, that's worth a lot of money if they can re-sign him. And I don't think I'd be doing it justice to just put a value on it right now. But I don't think it's too much short necessarily of $20 million a year that they'd expect to have to pay Stanley. Probably a little bit less, but not a lot less than that. So I'm hoping, you know, Ronnie comes back to the Ravens, hopefully on a slightly team-friendly deal. And I'm not talking about a big discount or anything, but if it's $1 million a year less of AAV, And it's something that'll secure his place in the Ravens Ring of Honor. You know, keep him playing with Lamar Jackson with a chance to win rings. I'm hoping he'd do a slight hometown discount for the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, the ideal scenario is to bring him back on a team friendly contract. They have, you know, held on to him through some issues, obviously not playing up to his potential for several years, not his fault necessarily due to injuries, but there was some, you know, a little bit of drama that came along with it. Mm-hmm. Along the way, and they really stuck with him through that. So maybe he kind of does them a little bit of a solid favor coming back and not kind of requiring the top of the market contract, even for an older veteran. But I did want to touch briefly on this game because the one sack that he was, you know, solely charged with, the Brian Burns play, I think, I was curious because the commentary about that was maybe it looked like he might have been looking for some interior help on that. And he kind of was sliding and he might have been expecting help from the guard there. Is that something that you saw, or do you think it was just him missing his assignment there?
Honestly, I had not seen that commentary, and I'm not saying that that couldn't be true. And the play is not as fresh in my mind visually as it should be. So some of the receptions and whatnot, I've probably looked at five times in terms of this sack, scored it. And I've reviewed the all 22 for potential changes. Didn't have one for this play.
Okay.
I would have said he was the guy. Yeah. And I did charge him with 100% of that sack. It wasn't just some, you know, fraction of it, which oftentimes sacks are shared, by the way, very commonly. And we'll notice when we get over to Fa'alele, there were some shared sacks involved.
Okay. And because I think it was just like the way it was such a clean like win by the defender, mm-hmm. almost as if Stanley was kind of expecting there to be some help from the interior, and he was, you know, kicking out to I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, the protection calls are called at the line and they're like, this is a slide to the left or a shift to the left. And that may have been something that there was some communication error. But regardless, it was defender had a straight line directly to Jackson on that play. And it wasn't the type of defender that you can just shake like we've seen Lamar do it in some instances. You know, it was a very athletic player who had a, you know, easy sack on that play. So anyway, I do think for the most part, Stanley has been a better pass protector this year than he has been in a couple years in the past. And it's good to see him. I think he's a big reason why, you know, the offense has taking a step tick upward. So hopefully, you know, he can play strong throughout the rest of the year. Anything else on Stanley before we move on?
No, I think that hits on it. Mobility still looks pretty good for Stanley, which at this point in the season, I'm really happy to see. We haven't seen him kind of wincing on that ankle, you know, the way we've witnessed really since it got hurt in 2020, I guess, where he really hasn't been able to play on it. It's been a good health season for Stanley, and it's been a largely good result. I will say Stanley suffers in my system because I don't have a high degree of tolerance for letting the cone be imperiled. So if Lamar Jackson can't step into his throw and feel like he could do it without risk, that's bad for Ronnie Stanley in terms of scoring. So that he gives up more of those sacrifice ground in exchange for maintaining mirror. That's just his play style. And we've seen different, you know, attempts to be a kind of a different guy, but he keeps coming back to this. It's exactly who he was in 2019 when he's an all pro. And I think that you know, it's probably who he is for the rest of his career. And for what it's worth, Lamar is extremely comfortable maneuvering away from proximity pressure on Stanley's side. Stanley's very good about avoiding the kind of play that happened in this game where Burns has his hands all over him.
Yeah. I think Stanley, you know, and Lamar, they've been playing together for a very long time, and they kind of know. I think, you know, Stanley knows what Lamar needs, and for the most part, he's able to kind of provide that. Takes advantage of Lamar's mobility for sure. But let's move to left guard Patrick McCary, coming off one of probably his worst games of his career, I would say, last week against Philadelphia. At least in my estimation, he gave up a lot of pressures. This week had a little bit of a rebound.
What yeah, absolutely. Team? Played very well this week. And you know, when McCarrie's not having penalties, or even when he has a lot of this year, he's played very well at left guard. And yeah, he did not have a good game against the Eagles. An F. It wasn't a complete fall off the table F. We've seen a lot worse Fs from other players, but it was an F. And this week he came back and he had a perfect slate as a pass blocker, which is, that's what you need to do. He also had a perfect slate for not having penalties. I did have him for 2 missed blocks. I'm sure there are people who would disagree or said, but yeah, he didn't miss the blocks. We didn't have the push and whatnot. Well, most of offensive line play is avoiding mistakes, you know, avoiding those lower frequency but very high severity errors that come primarily in pass blocking and with penalties. And McCarrie avoided those in this game. And so he ended up getting a 0.96, which is an A. And 5 level 2 blocks, 1 out of 1 on pulls, 2 highlights, 1 pancake. So he pretty much filled all the positive side of the scorecard without filling any of the negative side of the scorecard, really.
Yeah, so it's really good to see, you know, him kind of bouncing back from a poor performance. I think definitely the level of competition was a little bit lighter this time around. But, you know, to see him kind of bounce back and be able to have a very clean game is good to see. And hopefully, you know, he can continue that into next week, because his first game against Pittsburgh also wasn't one of his best. So we'll see how he does against probably a little bit stiffer competition next week. Tyler Linderbaum, how did he grade this week?
So not as good for Tyler. He's had some, you know, if it was Dexter Lawrence, I'm sure it would have been, it might have been worse, but 49 plays, made 43 of his blocks, missed 4, allowed half a pressure, and allowed a full quarterback hit. So it was all him. I couldn't find anyone else who was really responsible for that. In part, it would have been. And then he had a snap infraction to boot, and he left the game early, so he didn't have the high denominator that the guys on the right side had. McCarrie also left early, for that matter. But 0.76 was the raw score. 0.04 added to that as an adjustment brings him up to a C-. What was nice about McCarrie in this game, some of the mobility was outstanding. 4 level 2 blocks, 1 pancake, 3 out of 3 on pulls. He had 2 highlights. And the one I would want to talk about most is, very rarely does this occur, but he had 2 blocks on a pass play. No, it wasn't on a pass play. It was on a Lamar scramble. The 21-yard Lamar scramble, yep, where he got out front of that play, made a block at the line of scrimmage, and then made a block in level 2 that really helped Lamar get down the field. So just love seeing that. And, you know, kind of reminds you of the reason they drafted Linderbaum. He definitely has this year taken a step back as a pass blocker from where he was last year. And that's kind of unfortunate, because you hope your gains are going to be, you know, go in one direction only as you get, you know, a little more mature in the league. They still have, you know, he's still a very high quality center. It's just his pass blocking, if it's at this level, is going to keep him away from being an automatic kind of Pro Bowl selection every year. He's going to struggle to get the postseason honors unless he can get back to where he was last year.
Yeah, one of the things I've loved seeing with Linderbaum is his downfield blocking. Mm-hmm. He really is a special talent in that sense. When he's able to, you know, get out in front, whether it's a Derrick Henry run or a screen, or in this case, Lamar Jackson run. He has a great sense of you know, the defenders and what he needs to do and not do in terms of getting penalized. Cause sometimes you can get penalized downfield if you're not paying attention. I did want to ask about Linderbaum. I think he has been on the injury report a few times in recent weeks. I wonder if you've noticed if there's any kind of correlation between that, because I feel like he started off the season very strongly and he's kind of tailed off.
I'll read you off the grades I've had for him by game. And these might differ slightly from PFF. That's fine. A C+ in week 1, then a B-, an A, C, A. So through 5 weeks, I think he was doing very well. And then since then, it's been C- against Washington, D- against Tampa, C- against Cleveland, B versus Denver, A- versus Cincinnati, B- versus Pittsburgh, C- versus the Chargers, D+ versus the Eagles. Would expect that. That's frankly a very tough matchup. And then C- versus the Giants. So even with adjustments for opponents built into my system there, he hasn't really been nearly as good since week 6 as he had been before then.
Okay. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at you know, some of the injury reports. I think it's been a more recent thing that he's been on there. I think it's been like a back, potentially, if I'm remembering correctly. But hopefully, you know, maybe the bye week helped. We'll see, you know, in the coming week is will be a big one, as we talked about with McCary as well, against a very tough interior defensive line against the Steelers. So hopefully we're on a rebound there with him. Let's move on to the right guard, Daniel Falele. Not the best week out of him. Anything that really stood out in this matchup?
So, you know, they're basically asking him to do something that was very hard for him. So I'm going to start with that, where he lost a lot of his points. And that was on two separate pulls, both of which were on pass plays where his assignment just blew by him and was part of the sack. So on one case, there was an unblocked defender from the other side, and he ended up getting half of the charge for that sack. He could not catch up to, I forget if it was Burns or Thibodeau. I think it might have been once each on those guys. Yeah, he was beaten outside by zero, so that's Burns for the first sack zero. And effectively, that was a pressure. Lamar tried to run the ball, got to the line of scrimmage, so it's effectively the same charge as a pressure, but it's a third of a sack, as I always scored on my sheet, but it's the same exact score. And then late in the game, the one that was the sack of Johnson, he was too slow to block Thibodeau on his pull. So it was once against each guy. Honestly, having him pull in a pass blocking situation might be just something the Ravens need to try not to do. And I know they want to misdirect, but that's just it might be asking a player to do too much, because he's very ponderous still in his movements. Yep. And in both cases, I mean, he's way too late getting over to try and do anything about the play.
Yeah, I think it might just be a little bit of a square peg round hole type situation, where you're asking a player to do something that he just really doesn't have the skill set. And to some extent, you're right. You know, they want to be able to have some ability to run all the things in the playbook, keep teams off balance, not necessarily knowing what's happening, especially with some of these, you know, RPOs or run action type movements with the offensive line. But when you're working against what your player's skills are, it's something you need to, I think, consider completely removing, because it's probably in the end more negative than positive. So we'll see. I mean, at this point in the season, I think he's pretty much, you know, going to be the guy unless he gets hurt. So you kind of have to manage what he is and who he is and put him in the best position that you can. And maybe you can't do that for every single play. You have to call what you feel is necessary, but and you can't build a game just around Daniel Falele. Unfortunately, there's some limitations there, and that's part of what you have to deal with when you're starting him at right guard. So I'm hopeful that that can be kind of limited in terms of play calling, in terms of play design. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how that plays out and what they have up their sleeve in the moments that really matter.
So a couple more things about Falele. He did miss 9 blocks in this game. And if you look at it, 3 were losses at the line of scrimmage, 6 were in L2. And those blocks, he is not decisive, and he's also not quick. And that's really holding him back in terms of some of the scoring here. And L2 NB, I think, showed up 5 times on his sheet. So that's level 2, no block. Very common, and it can be a matter of indecisiveness of not being quick enough. It could be multiple things, but Falele's had good games in level 2, and he made 5 level 2 blocks in this game, but he also missed.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A bunch, so it didn't really have a good efficiency when he got there. One pancake, minus one net points on six pulls. That's really bad. That doesn't happen too often, but it did in this game. Two highlight blocks, both combinations for Falele. You know, I can't point at it and say that he's going to be the guy that costs you the Ravens a playoff game. I'll just say that Falele, you need to be careful about not putting him in position to do something he can't do. Yeah. And, you know, anytime you ask Daniel Falele to pull, you're asking him to do something that's a very tough ask. It's kind of like asking your shortstop to bat cleanup or asking your 250 slugging outfielder on base percentage to bat leadoff. I mean, it's not the ideal usage of his talents.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, that's one of the concerns that certain people had in the offseason, preseason, beginning of the season. You're trying to force something that may or may not be the best fit. But at this point, you know, the Ravens have gotten the same offensive line out there, what, 12 games in a row now, 13 games in a row now. And for the most part, it's worked pretty well. Has had its ups and downs, but it's definitely been better than I think when it started at the beginning of the season.
There's all kinds of teams in the National Football League who have health problems on the offensive line. And when they have them, it's often a 2, 3, even 4 positions for some teams. They got one guy who they can count on to play the league. The Ravens have all 5 guys. Yep. And in fact, they have really all 9 guys they started the season with. There might be one exception like Saleh or somebody who was cut and then you sent down or something. But basically, their set of offensive linemen, they've had the same guys available pretty much the whole year. That's just a wonderful blessing to start with in terms of building some continuity and whatnot. And even with that, the Ravens have, you know, struggled to be a little bit better than a league average offensive line.
Yeah. It just comes down to talent at that point. I think you just have to hope to manage it as best you can when you're offensive coordinator. So we can move on to Roger Rosengarten. To me, highlight one of the really fun stories about this team from the offensive line perspective. You know, he's kind of thrown into the fire as a rookie and then steady improvement, in my opinion, throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, this was his best game of the year, no doubt about it. And he's facing Thibodeau for a lot of the game, Burns for some of it. Did have a lot of help in terms of chip blocks. I don't want to pretend like the guy's not getting help game after game after game in this way. And I've held down some of his adjustments because of that. But he missed 5 blocks, didn't have any negative plays in this game, didn't have a penalty, didn't have any pressures allowed of any sort, didn't allow penetration on a run play for a loss, none of that. 0.91 was his base points per play with adjustment. He's in the A range either way because you only need to get a 0.87 for an A minus at tackle. And his adjusted score is 0.96. So outstanding game from Rosengarten. One of the really nice stories about this game. 5 level 2 blocks. He did have a couple of really nice combination blocks in level 2. In fact, I think he had one play where he had 2 blocks in level 2. That was one of the nice highlights that you really pick out on tape. And then one pancake and 2 out of 3 on polls. So if there's any way they could continue to get 90% of that from Roger Rosengarten the rest of the year, it'd be wonderful. PFF, by the way, has been a little more, I think, optimistic about the scoring for him in recent weeks than I have. I still think he's been good, but don't get me wrong. But I have him, they have him for no pressures in the last 4 games. And I have him for CACA in those 4 games, which is that's perfectly fine. Kaka, there you go. You better by that.
Well, I think he's been a little bit better than Kaka in my opinion. Yeah. But I think it's nice to see a rookie come in and have improvement, and whether or not he's been clean slate. I mean, it kind of depends on how you define a pressure. Mm-hmm. But I think we have seen growth out of him, and he's potentially a foundational player for the Ravens moving forward. And to hit on a player like that in the second round, starting off as a tackle, that's a great situation.
Well, let me ask you the question then. Would you be comfortable if they don't re-sign Stanley to move Rosengarten to left tackle in 2025 specifically?
No. Okay. I don't think so. And that's just because that's a big ask for somebody who's come into the league, played fine at right tackle. Left tackle is a completely different beast, especially in the NFL. And some teams, they're going to have an amazing edge defender who's going to line up over their right tackle. Pittsburgh is one of those teams. But for the most part, you're going to be going against a better edge rusher on the left side the majority of the time. He hasn't played any snaps there. So do I feel confident with that without seeing it? I don't. So I think he can be a long-term starting at right tackle, and maybe down the line, he might have to be forced into playing left tackle, and he shines there as well. But at this point, I don't think I'm ready for that commitment.
Complex problem. We've talked about this a lot, so I don't want to belabor it here, but the Ravens have 3 other offensive tackles hitting free agency at the end of this year. They're going to have some tough monetary decisions to make, and it's in an environment where they have a lot of players they'd probably like to extend this offseason, extend them early. Players like Humphrey, Ardarius Washington, possibly Tyler Linderbaum, Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely. I mean, they have all kinds of guys that this is the year to get an advantage and sign those guys early.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting kind of place to be in. What decisions they make, because there are a lot of choices. There's a lot of players that the Ravens will probably want to lock up. A la Rashad Bateman to get that kind of contract for 3 years. Mm-hmm. at a good team friendly rate to reward good play, but without having to break the bank. So we'll see if ability to keep a player like Roger Rosengarten as a starting offensive contributor at a low contract value will allow them to make some of those plays. Or moves, I should say. Anything on the other kind of?
I mean, they all played limited. I'll just say very briefly. Voorhees made 8 out of 9 blocks, 2 level 2 blocks. That's good. Cleveland made 9 out of 10 blocks, 1 level 2 block. That was fine. Jones did not play so great. He was in there for 10 snaps, 7 blocks, 3 missed, and also had a false start penalty when he came in as a 6th offensive lineman. So, not a great game, but nobody had enough games to get an actual score. Those guys have played so few snaps on the entire season between them, with the exception of Voorhees, who's had, a couple starts in there, maybe even 3, but the other guys have not played enough really to get any kind of a finger in the wind, even of how good they'd be. And I'm not sure, I don't really foresee this being a case. And I think you mentioned this earlier, where the Ravens are going to make a real special change to the offensive line entering the playoffs and all of a sudden say, okay, Falele, you've had your chance, Ben Cleveland, come on down, kind of thing.
Yeah. I think, it would have to be injury that would force the Ravens' hand. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that doesn't happen. They do have players that have some experience. Jones in particular, he's been a starter in the NFL. And obviously they felt enough confidence with Voorhees to start the season with him as a starter. So I think it would be interesting to see if one of the guards got hurt, if it would be him or Cleveland who goes in at this point. But I think, between them, they have at least viable backups at the offensive line positions, which is more than some teams can say right now. So it's not the worst place to be in.
Absolutely. So let's move on. Let's talk about some skill position players. We talked about a lot of these guys earlier, but there may be some other points you still want to make. Go back to part one if we don't mention your favorite player, but who would you like to talk about from the skill players we haven't yet?
You know, we mentioned Mark Andrews a little bit, just the touchdown, mostly talking about him. It's good to see him kind of be back in his Mark Andrews form. You know, it's obviously a slow start to the season, but to me right now, he's still a important part of the offense that I think is the player that we would expect him to be at this point. You know, he can get down the field. He's a great target on third down. He may not be able to create quite as much separation as he once did, but he's been very reliable. Drops haven't really been an issue with him this year. And I think he's someone who Lamar trusts, and he's been a great red zone threat for them. So it was nice to see him come through again in the clutch on third down in the red zone.
Yeah, no issue with his play at all. I think he only got 2 targets for 24 yards in this game. Nobody got a lot of targets. Everybody was very efficient. Those were the kind of the 2 rules of thumb. The one guy who was a little less efficient than normal was probably Flowers, who had some shorter targets in this game. But, you know, he did some positive things for the Ravens on offense as well. And he certainly has been there the whole year in terms of piling up the aggregation stats as well as putting in a good yards per target number. So I don't have any issue with that. I'll go to Bateman briefly. The guy is having a fantastic year. If you're not buying in yet, you are late. You are very late. And the big number for him, let me get to it, make sure I have it exactly correct, is 10.9 yards per target right now. That's 10.9 with 3 games remaining. Only one player in Ravens history has ever had a better yards per target, and that was Mark Andrews in his rookie year at 11.04. So 60 targets, and he's got 654 yards. It's exactly 10.9. I don't know. Whatever you thought Bateman was, whatever reservations you have in accepting Bateman into what you think of as being a very high-quality wide receiver, time to maybe let your guard down a little bit. I know there's a few of you out there who still don't believe or say, no, I need to see it for a full season, or no, I need to see it into 2026, because his trick is always he gets injured on us. And you know what? Stop raising the bar. Look at this year for what it was. Honestly, look at his career at this point in terms of the chances he has had. And he hasn't been healthy the whole time, but the last 2 years he has been. And he's you know, been very good in terms of yards per target over his whole career, even including kind of a subpar 2023. So anyway, really happy about where Rashad Bateman is now.
Yeah, I agree. And I was on the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, I've always believed in him and his talent. I felt like, you know, the injuries definitely held him back. And unfortunately, I think, you know, the Ravens have missed the player that he could have been the first couple of years of his career. Because I think this talent has always been there. He just hasn't been able to get on the same page with Lamar. And he's really made that mark this year. And I think we already talked about him to a certain extent, so I'm not going to, you know, keep rambling on about it, but it's really great to see him and great to see him earn that trust with Lamar as somebody who's is a go-to guy, and especially someone who's, he can do anything across the entire stretch of the field.
So we're a little pissed off about the underthrown ball from Lamar, but think back to 2023 and what the problem was with Bateman. Lamar was overthrowing all those balls by 10 yards for him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a matter of Bateman isn't a fast guy or Bateman wasn't getting some separation, because, you know, he had good separation metrics. And I know it could be distorted by exactly when it's measured, but he had enough good separation metrics that you know, he could have caught some balls. And the other thing is, Bateman is a guy who can go up and contest for the football. He's, you know, certainly got decent size for that. So, you know, the underthrown ball was kind of sad in that respect. It's just the antithesis of, you know, what had happened in 23 primarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was week one where he made the crazy acrobatic catch against Kansas City to set the Ravens up for a potential go tying score
right at
the
end of the game. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if that was like a tipping point in what he was going to be for the season, if that kind of set off like alarm bells in Lamar's head saying this is somebody who's going to make plays for me. But it seems like he's been much more willing to pass him the ball in clutch situations consistently than he has in previous seasons. So, yeah, it's really great to see that.
if the Ravens were to trade Bateman this offseason, by the way, I am not suggesting they do that. I'm just trying to get a mark on his value with this. What draft pick would you demand in exchange for just give me JJ points. How many JJ points do you want? And if you want to just say, hey, I take the 35th pick of the draft or whatever for him.
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it would have to be a very high second or late first at minimum, I think, based on the contract value and based off of his skill set. Anything less than that, I wouldn't even consider it.
I think honestly, after this game in particular, my spot in the draft is a low 20s pick. Like 20 to 22 is where I traded for. They traded Marquise Brown for, I think, effectively what was the equivalent of a high second, including his value. And he had, he had some how do I want to say this? More of a track record in terms of targets, certainly more of a track record in terms of doing some other gadgety stuff that had value to the team, but also less of a deep threat and quality mid-range target that Bateman has proved to be. I think right now you got one of the most valuable contracts in football, and the Ravens are really blessed right now with two guys who are not making a lot of money at a position where a whole lot of players are making a lot of money. And everybody wants number one receivers. Everybody looks around the league and says, why can't Lamar have it? Well, the two guys they have are about the best value you can get per dollar of cap spent. And the Ravens are incredibly lucky to have this pairing. And their backups to them are all excellent. I mean, right now, I'm happy with Walker, very happy with exactly who Aguilar and Wallace are within their spot on the totem pole.
Yeah, I think, they have a good core as it stands when everybody's healthy and available. The one thing we talked about in the first half was, is depth potentially an issue? I think that, if one of the injuries were to happen, we saw when Bateman went out, the offense definitely kind of took a step back, I think, against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And there might have been some other issues as well, but I think that was one of the reasons why they kind of struggled, especially in the second half of that game. They didn't have that additional threat on the field. So I would be a little bit concerned, but maybe with Hez Walker's, emergence, we haven't really seen much of him, but he's someone who potentially could step into a larger role now that he's at least broken into the lineup.
Yeah. And it's good to see the Ravens succeed and DaCosta succeed in some wide receiver draft picks. And I think if DaCosta's, starting to separate out in terms of what these two were good at, wide receiver picks seem to be something that DaCosta has been better on than Ozzie was. And Ozzie certainly had lots of other advantages, in terms of his long history of great drafts. But these are, these are a couple great picks.
I guess moving on, I'll hit on one more player. This is a player, one of my favorites we talked about before, Justice Hill. I just want to continue just to highlight the type of performance he's had this year. Whether he's asked to be in pass protection, to leak out on third down and be an outlet, to be used in the screen game, he's been one of the better screen receivers I think the Ravens have had potentially in a very long time.
Since Ray Rice, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely, since Ray Rice. He's very good at the timing of that, ability to make a man miss in the open field and pick up, 10, 15 yards very quickly when the space is available. He has that short area explosiveness. We saw him this game, make somebody miss and take it to all the way for a touchdown. He has that ability. I'm glad to see him, getting the opportunity that I think he's probably deserved, in kind of the hard work that he's put in over the years. But he seems very locked into his role. And I think he's just been a great player for the Ravens. He even had a good return in this game. So he's a very versatile player.
Yeah, he'd be, I think we're going to forego the MVPs. I think we both have Jackson as number one, but Hill would be certainly one of the players who would at least be an honorable mention in terms of this game. And, I guess I pointed this out in the first episode. When he's not set in ship blocking, he's exceptionally valuable to the Ravens in terms of what he can do in the screen game. And the Ravens have got to figure out how's the best way to take advantage of that. It might be, part of it may be taking him out of the backfield entirely, getting him into pony sets where he's kind of a flanker. And they can use him differently there. Slot receiver, whatever you want to call it, but somebody who can go in motion is the key point there. He has the speed you need to do that. And now he's locked up for 2 more years.
Yep.
Broke out of a slump in this game as a receiver, but did so in a big way.
Yeah. I think one of the keys to using him there is just how they're willing to interchange him and Derrick Henry and not always have them on in, you know, expected situations where it's like a third and long and Hill is out there. When he's in there in first down or second down and he has a threat of, you know, potentially running the ball or passing the ball, using him as a screen player, that's really when he's most effective and not something that he's kind of pigeonholed into.
Yeah. All right. How about we move on to some questions in the mailbag here? Good discussion about those guys. I think we gave a good amount to the other players during the earlier parts of the show, if you go back and listen to some of that. Okay, so we have Randy Morgan. Now, this is a good one. Purely from a competitive standpoint, not convenience in the playoffs, would you rather A, host the Steelers, then play at Buffalo as the 3 seed, or B, play at Houston, then Kansas City as the 5 seed?
That's an interesting question. I'd rather have the home game.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think in that playoff atmosphere, even against a tough division opponent that you've already played twice, I think that's the advantageous place to be. And then, either way, you're going on the road the next 2 games, regardless. Probably against the 2 and 3 or 1 and 2 seeds, most likely. So, I'd like to start it out at home.
The other reason why I'd like to start it out at home is I don't think there's a zero chance you end up getting the AFC Championship game at home if the Houston whoever winner. And that could be Houston, Pittsburgh. It could be Pittsburgh goes in and upsets Kansas City in their place. Wouldn't put it past them. Wouldn't they think they're a reasonable chance to accomplish that? You might get the AFC Championship game at home. You know, if they have to go to Buffalo, well, it's a tough draw. You know, having to go up there, the potential weather implications of a game like that after playing a home game, it's not ideal. But then again, you know, what playoff situations ever do you get a truly easy game, particularly after the first round?
Yeah, higher seed is always better. Gives you that opportunity.
All right. Got some more questions here. We'll move on. Okay. Well, Evan, and Evan has a long number after his name, says, why are the Ravens willing to make major personnel changes on defense to improve, but nothing on the offensive line?
Interesting question. I think the offensive line is an interesting place where it's really a unit, you know, it's a thing that you work together. And if it's when you have to make replacements, you do for, you know, injury reasons. That's why we had a shakeup at the beginning of the season. But when this may not be the best phrase of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but it's kind of appropriate because unless it's really broken, I don't think you want to fix it. And I don't think we've gotten to the point where it's really broken yet. And the other point to that is I'm not sure if there's really a much better option in waiting in the wings.
I'll still say, although I'm positive about what Cleveland did on the field, and I think he earned the right to fail at right guard. I don't think that I know enough relative to what John does in from his practice and whatnot in terms of making that choice. There's obviously something he doesn't like. It's not apparent from the game film of time he's played before, but I trust him to make the right judgment for the team in a case like this. Kind of unfortunate that Cleveland is probably going to leave Baltimore without really making a contribution here. It wouldn't surprise me if he went somewhere else, got his practice habits were appreciated for what they were, and he played well. It wouldn't surprise me. On the other hand, this should have been a good opportunity for him. And the one thing about Fa'alele is that I think a lot of Daniel Fa'alele's problems have been isolated to his own play. And if you look at how I don't think Linderbaum's play is suffering directly because of Fa'alele. I think it's been more of a case of the relative size of McCary and Linderbaum, both very light, And there are some teams targeting the A gap on that side. I don't think it's as much that Linderbaum is being isolated or left on an island because Falele doesn't know who to block kind of thing. I don't think that's really the problem. And on the other side, we certainly haven't seen that at all. Now, Rosengarten has had plenty of help, and we made the point there from receiving blockers, but Falele hasn't been letting him down in a way that's really impacted his grade in a negative degree or his play in a negative degree. So I think that might be a reason why it's okay to stick with Falele, is that what's happened to him is largely his own slow-footedness getting him into trouble, maybe on some run plays, more than it is he's been a really terrible pass blocker.
Yeah, I think to me, you know, just getting back to the point of maybe you get better results with Ben Cleveland, but then I think there's more to it than that. I think there's locker room potential kind of like issues if you make a change at this point. And I don't know about Cleveland, all the issues and the reasons why he's been kind of overlooked. I think it's clearly related to work habits, practice habits. I think it hasn't been stated specifically to that point, but it's kind of been spoken around to those senses. And I don't think, unless that has completely done 180, you reward a player by, you know, inserting him into the lineup when you have someone who is kind of at the opposite end of that, and someone who seems like he's trying to work as hard as he can to be as best a player as he can be. So, as many limitations that we talked about with Falele, I don't really see a shakeup actually having a positive benefit at this point in the season.
Yeah. I think it would be fair to say that Warhop has done about as good a job as the Ravens could have hoped with the offensive line that he was given. Admittedly, they've stayed healthy, but he's kept, you know, a fairly mediocre interior group, you know, playing at a pretty decent level. And I think that, you know, the line is held together under him. Some of it's health, but some of it you got to give him credit for probably being a reasonable successor to Joe D. But I do think that he's not long for that offensive line role, and they're going to need to, among other position groups, get an offensive line coach who's very high powered. And it might be a guy who's here only for a couple of years, either a younger thinker, offensive mind, I wouldn't mind that, or a guy who's a really well-known guy in his 50s who still might be around for 5 or 6 years, but also could take another young offensive line coach under his wing to be the guy after he departs. But the succession plan needs to be rebuilt, and part of that is a new offensive line coach, I believe, in 2025.
I'm in agreement with that. I think you go in a different direction than the current offensive line coach. And maybe not. I mean, Harbaugh tends to be very loyal to players that or coaches that he brings in. So maybe, you know, given the difficult situation that it was, they see there's a chance to grow from it. But I think potentially there's room to get a better result out of the players you have. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I think for this specific season, it's pretty much the best that you could expect out of the players that you had available and the situation with the coaching. It's not a complete disaster, which I think a lot of people thought it might be.
All right, got one more question here, and then we'll call it a show here. This comes from you, Cole, and he says, there have been multiple Ravens games this year where the post-game article reads, Ravens scored on four or five or six straight drives. They must be approaching some sort of record, no? It's a good point you're making on that. They have been unstoppable at times. And this was a game where they had five straight touchdown drives, and they've had several of those this year where they've been unstoppable for a period of time during the game. They scored on six drives in a row or whatever. And the key statistic here is points per drive. And the Ravens, incredibly, are still not at the top of the NFL in points per drive right now. There are something like fourth in the league. I'll look it up real quickly here while you're responding to this. But that's the basis of AV that you see on PFR as points per drive. And it's also the best way to relativize offenses around the league. The problem is that the Ravens, you know, nursing big leads, have let some points per drive slip away from them. Like they obviously gave up two drives at the end of this game. 1 points per drive way of allocating it would say that the last one didn't count, but they still gave up two drives at the end. They gave up a drive on this bad fourth and one decision, frankly, in the first half. So points per drive would be the direction I'd point you to in terms of statistic that kind of puts the pieces that you're talking about together.
And one other note I would have there is that the Ravens, I do believe, still lead the league in red zone success in terms of ability to turn red zone possessions into touchdowns. They've been extremely efficient there, and that's a big reason why they have been, you know, so successful as an offense, is that red zone ability. So that's something that is, you know, really what separates, I think, the good from the great in terms of offenses. We've had teams in the past that have driven down the field and really stalled out in the red zone. But this team has, I think, some of the, that's where you really get the benefit of having a Derrick Henry and a Lamar Jackson on the field at the same time. And some of the weapons like Likely and Andrews as pass catchers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Good question, you. Anyway, FTN is a good site to get that points per drive information if you're interested in that. Gabe, always great talking football with you. How do people contact you and ask you a question?
Yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie is my handle there. I'm also on Blue Sky at the same handle. More active on Twitter, I would say, but I tend to post on both those platforms. And yeah, I'd love to interact with anybody on the site.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. I know you're at the end of a 2-hour show. That means you love the show. Please write us a 50-word, 5-star review. We'd love to have one more of those. That drives traffic to the show. And always, if you can sell the show by word of mouth to a friend, oftentimes an older person, maybe some with a STEM background might really like it, please do so. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.